Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to yet another episode. Hamish Hodder, you're back down in Melbourne.
I am.
Hey, you left your hard drive here, by the way.
I know. I feel like it's impossible not to forget one thing every single time. Or maybe that's just me. But I forgot maybe the most important thing because that hard drive has like, it's a very important hard drive. It has like all my files on it. It has like all my backups, yeah. YouTube, the podcast. It has everything. So yeah, hopefully it arrives
you're
safe.
Like, sorry, mate. Can you express post that to me? I need it.
Yeah. But yeah. Nah, fortunately, it should be fine.
We had
fine.
A good time. Good week in Canberra, either way. It was good to hang out with you, dude.
Yeah.
And how's things back down in Melbourne? How's Lucy the dog? All good?
Yeah, everything's good. You know, I was surprised. I'm very happy to say that I didn't get sick. I think this is the first time I've gone through an airport and not gotten sick in a long time.
Wow.
So there you go. Unless it's still coming. Unless it needs a few days incubate.
None of that. No, you did not get sick, Hamish. Congratulations.
Yeah. No,
it's good. Oh, dear.
How are things up in Canberra?
Yeah, it's pretty stressy time at the moment. We're recording this on Thursday and it's Black Friday tomorrow. And by the time this goes out, on Black Friday, we are releasing New Money Education. So this is almost like this feels weird because it's not out yet, but I'm like announcing it.
Yeah, exactly.
As right now, you guys can log on to newmoney.education, and that is, if you didn't catch my YouTube video explaining it, that is our updated course platform that we are hosting. And we've got two courses up there: Introduction to Stock Analysis, which is a big, beefy 6-hour step-by-step course on Warren Buffett style investing. So we talk like financial statements, how to value stocks, that kind of thing. And then the other course we've got is a beginner's one, so Stock Market Investing for Beginners. So if you're brand new to investing, don't know where to start, don't know what to do, it's a 4-hour course just running through the passive investing strategy, exactly how to implement it, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's actually been quite a wild ride because we've been we've got 5 of us here in the office, and at all times over the past like 9 months, 4 of us have been working on New Money Education. So
yeah, I was going to ask how long you've been working on it, because I flicked through some of them and the quality is just kind of insane. And it's only been 9 months that you've been working on that. I mean, I guess, nine months hard. It's crazy.
Yeah, going real hard on that. So we didn't want the quality to be any less than our YouTube videos.
Yeah.
That was like our goal.
Yeah.
So it did take a lot of time because it's just the motion graphics. And like, obviously, it took me a while just to script everything perfectly, but the real time sink is the motion graphics. So the boys have been working so hard to get those done. So if you guys watch it, you'll see that the quality is the same, if not better, than the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it did take us 9 months. I always remember, like, I remember there was someone I was following in the Finance Nation. They released a course, and then their announcement video, they were like, "We've been working on this over the last 2 weekends." And I was like, oh my God.
That is the problem with the industry that we're in. Is there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that just kind of throw something together really quickly and then charge a crazy price, and then people kind of get disappointed when they enter, people make, it's often the case that people will make like really good YouTube content and then their other stuff like isn't up to that standard. It's like an afterthought to them. So unfortunately,
it's just trying to milk money out of their subscribers, basically. That's the goal.
Unfortunately, that's just... It's put a bad taste, I think, in a lot of people's mouths in regards to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, honestly, that's what we have to fight against. Like, yeah. Obviously, I know that these courses are super high quality, but the people out there don't know. So that's the uphill battle that we're fighting. I actually put in one of the FAQs that I typed up was just like, is this course legit? And then I just wrote a blurb on why the course is legit, which is crazy that you have to do that these days, but you do have to do it. But anyway, so yeah, it's out there. If it's something that you're interested, I won't harp on too much about this, obviously here for the podcast. So, but if you are interested in it, may as well alert you guys. We are doing a Black Friday weekend introductory pricing. So we've got the two courses, which I was just talking through before. We've also, for the Black Friday weekend, we've bundled them together. And the way we've bundled it is that if you buy that bundle, you'll just pay the price for introduction to stock analysis. So you effectively get, you pay the introductory price for introduction to stock analysis. So it's even cheaper. So you effectively get stock market investing for beginners completely free. And that makes it sound like, stock market investing for beginners is probably just this cheapy course. But no, it's like a four, that course is a 4-hour professionally edited course that you're getting for essentially the same price. So if you're interested, we're not doing that pricing again on the bundle ever. So that's like a special introductory Black Friday pricing. So if you're interested, feel free to check it out. But yeah, otherwise, even if you just have a look at the pages, I'd really appreciate it. Just give me some feedback on what you think. That'd be awesome. But yeah. Yeah, that's new money education, everyone.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to my TED Talk.
Yeah, very exciting. Have you organized? You got to have like
it
a
It is. I'm just drowning on about it because we've literally been going, we've been doing this for 9 months. So it's like crazy. But anyway.
You've got to.
Sorry, I cut you off.
No. I think we got a bit of lag. Our usual, we're back to the lag, unfortunately. It was it was good last week having it in person. But I was saying, you got to have are you having a party or something? You've got to have something to kind of decompress the last 9 months.
I should have a party. I should organize something. But in all honesty, the party that I want is just to sleep.
just to stop for a moment.
I just want to sleep for once. Yeah. I've slept on average, I think, 4 hours per night for about the last week.
Wow.
And I'm just crazy. I'm like off with the fairies right now. I just want this out. I just want to have a long nap. But yeah, I should organize some party. Maybe in a week's time once I've recovered a little bit.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, all right, let's get into some podcasting. Hamish, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, again, there's a couple of big news stories that I actually didn't really see coming at all. We have a very interesting development in the cryptocurrency space. CZ, the founder of Binance, the biggest trading platform in the world, has pled guilty to a number of anti-money laundering violations and other financial crimes. So there's a whole story to kind of dive into there. Then we also have a bunch of news around Sam Altman, the CEO, former CEO of OpenAI, and that whole story, which I haven't taken too much of a look at because it seems like every day there's something new that happened regarding that story.
Do you know there is something new that happened today? Oh, maybe I'll save it.
Yes.
All right, I'll save it for you, but the people already know about it.
Exciting. And then,
They're the two main ones. And then what else are you talking about?
Yeah, then we've got just a couple of smaller stories. Nvidia reported their earnings, which I thought would be interesting to look at because they've been on this red hot AI hype and train at the moment. So we can continue to see how their earnings have developed. And then there was a couple of media-related news stories that I kind of bundled together that I thought we could talk about.
Very cool.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So,
very cool. All right. Well, let's just do it. Let's get into it, I reckon. What do you reckon?
Yeah, yeah. So sorry, everyone. We are dealing with, unfortunately, a little bit of lag. So if we're talking over each other, we'll try not to too much. But I think maybe let's just start with the biggest story that I, at least I saw this week, which was Changpeng Zhao, or more better known as CZ, the founder and CEO of Binance, just pled guilty to violating anti-money laundering requirements. Which has kind of been, it was a story that was kind of humming along in the background. The DOJ, the Department of Justice in the US, had been investigating this for quite some time, and there'd been some tidbits here and there over time. But yeah, this was certainly, I think, a big conclusion, or at least one conclusion to this story. And it is just another development in the wild, I called it the latest chapter in the regulation of the crypto wild west, which
true.
It's been kind of crazy. Like last year we had, you know, all of these institutions collapsing. You had FTX collapse. You had, I'm blanking on names, BlockFi collapsed, I believe.
Yep, there was a few of them.
There was a bunch. You had, you know, frauds like, was it SafeMoon cryptocurrency was exposed last year. There was so much that just came out last year in regarding cryptocurrency. And then it feels like this year is like where like all the regulation kind of came down, like where the law kind of landed. We, of course, just covered the FTX fiasco. The SafeMoon people got a couple of the founders of that actually got arrested as well. Just a couple of months ago. I don't think we spoke about it, but that also happened. And now we have Binance and CZ and Binance. So for those who don't know, Binance is the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the world. So, you know, FTX was obviously an enormous story, and that, you know, is a crazy fraud that happened. But now we have, the criminal justice system coming down on not just a cryptocurrency platform, but the biggest one. Continues to be the biggest in the world. It was founded in 2017, and they actually handle about 40% of the world's crypto transactions, which is kind of crazy. So not only are they the biggest fund, they're about half the size of the entire market in terms. Exchange platform. They're about half the size of the entire market.
They used to be less, but then everyone below them went bankrupt.
Everyone below them committed fraud.
It used to be FTX number two and then Binance number one. But yeah, obviously now FTX is...
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a few of that. There's been a few that have gone kaput. So essentially on Tuesday, CZ appeared in Seattle Federal Court where he pled guilty to a number of charges. And he pled guilty as a part of a deal reached with the DOJ. So he had a plea deal, and in that deal, he agreed to step down as the CEO of Binance. He will personally pay $50 million. Binance will pay $4.3 billion in a settlement, which is the largest crypto settlement ever, by the way. Which I guess there hasn't been all that much regulation on crypto, so that kind of makes sense that it's the largest, but it is still an enormous figure. Binance will actually very likely be able to continue operating, which is kind of surprising given some of the charges that they are going to just be allowed to continue operating. I'll get into the specifics of the charges in a second, but it's kind of wild that they just continued. Part of the deal is that they're allowed to continue operating, so. So there you go. That's kind of the nature of the deal. So what are the charges? So there's really three main counts, I believe, or maybe there's just three in total, but these were certainly the ones that I saw people covering. The first was failing to have a sufficient anti-money laundering program. So money laundering, of course, is the practice of hiding the origin of money used to facilitate crimes. And as a platform handling U.S. transactions, Binance is required to monitor for suspicious activity. So they're a business that handles monetary transactions. They need to take certain steps. They're actually required specifically to take, and this is kind of a quote, reasonable steps to ascertain the source and purpose of client funds. So they have to have some kind of program in place where they're at least trying. to figure out, where's this money coming from and what's the purpose of it?
Yeah, it's like basic stuff. It's not like super complicated. It's just like I was watching Richard's video on this earlier. It's like if you're a small business in, Omaha and you send $500,000 to an account in the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
Like that's questionable. It just needs to flag things that are questionable, but I'm just like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even Commonwealth Bank in Australia recently faced some scrutiny for this specifically. I think it was maybe last year or the year before. They were fined, I believe, for a number of similar things, not, checking the origin of large cash deposits made in at their banks and that sort of thing. Kind of turning a blind eye to that. But yeah, they of course need to, have that in place. The DOJ alleges that not only did they not take reasonable steps to stop money laundering, but they also knowingly allowed it to occur. Essentially they had some evidence of a larger Binance user who was known to be involved in illicit transactions. And Binance's compliance team essentially instructed them to make a new account because the old account had been compromised. At least this is the evidence kind of that they provided. So there was actually evidence that not only did they not do anything to stop money laundering, they knew it was occurring and kind of allowed it to take place, which is, of course, a big no-no. One compliance employee was quoted saying... I don't know where they got this quote from, but it was in kind of the press release. It was quoted saying, "We need a banner. Is washing drug money too hard these days? Come to Binance. We've got cake for you." Which is a hilarious quote to be caught saying from your compliance team.
I wonder why CZ pled guilty.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they have a good case here. I guess it's not too surprising. I guess if this is what we're seeing publicly, there's probably a mountain of other evidence that made this fairly a case closed, a pretty simple case.
It's pretty funny.
It is kind of funny.
They really shot themselves in the foot with the stuff that they've said that's now come up through the investigation. They should, just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Like they could have, they've really like the quotes that have come up out of their investigation. It's just like so damning that they're stone dead guilty. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the compliance team, what was it like last year? They had that other quote, which was like, we're running an unregulated crypto exchange or something. Like one of the compliance teams said that. Like,
we're running a flippin' unregulated finance exchange, bro, or something like that. Yeah. Like, wow, all right.
Yeah.
Proud of yourselves?
Yeah, which is funny because that's basically what the second count was. The second count was conducting an unlicensed money transmitting business. So any entity handling money transactions in the US needs to be registered as a licensed money transmitting business. So Binance kind of split their entities into two entities. They had a US entity that was registered, but their main platform was not. And the US entity only transacted in some cryptocurrencies and had other limitations. So US customers should have only been using the US version of the site, but CZ allegedly helped some big money clients avoid using the US platform to avoid compliance. So from reading it, it basically seemed like he basically suggested that they use a VPN to be able to log into to the main Binance site. To kind of disguise their location. Again, big no-no. Can't be directing clients to be making transactions through the site that's not regulated by the US. big no-no. And then count three related to violating US sanctions with certain countries. So they allowed and facilitated transactions with regions which they weren't allowed to because of sanctions. Binance caused about $900 million in transactions with people in Iran. And then there was other sanctioned jurisdictions, including Cuba, Syria, Ukraine, and North Korea. As Richard said in his video, pretty much everyone. they allowed transactions anywhere.
That's funny.
Which I thought was quite funny.
Very loose.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the three main charges, I believe. The next question might be, you know, will he go to prison? And the answer is probably not, it seems. He does face a maximum sentence for these crimes of 18 months. So technically he can be imprisoned for a year and a half. But you might be wondering, well, why is that sentence so low? But, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried, for example, we just covered, is facing 115 years as a maximum sentence. What's the difference? Well, the difference is SBF stole money from FTX users, whereas while these are crimes that CZ did commit, they're more violations of compliance rather than actual theft. Those are two very different situations. One is, you know, you weren't registered, you didn't have the right money laundering thing in place, and the other one is stealing $10 billion or $8 billion. Those two things are weighed very differently, at least in the US criminal justice system, which is why it's more of a fine and a settlement for these kinds of crimes than prison, which is ultimately what happened. $4.3 billion fine for Binance.
There you go.
So yeah, that's the story. Big development in the crypto space. I guess we'll kind of see maybe more of this as it plays out. I think it just happened overnight or last couple of days. So we'll see if there's any other developments in what's in this plea deal.
Yep, it definitely seems that the crypto industry continues to get absolutely poleaxed. I think it's been a long time coming, but it's just so interesting that I don't know, all of these crypto bros, all of these big crypto, you know, business owners and entrepreneurs that were seen as, you know, on the front of Forbes like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and you know, everybody was singing their praises, you know, the most philanthropic billionaire, I think they called Sam Bankman-Fried. Now all of them, literally like all of them, are just just getting chucked in prison.
Well, I think some people thought crypto was going to be like this way that currency was just going to be kept outside of regulation, like that it was going to be this new thing that currency is now going to be, you know, the US isn't going to have any hand in regulating transactions. But like, that's just ridiculous. I mean, of course they're going to try and
you can do whatever you want now.
Yeah, like I think
some you can launder money, you can pay for drugs, you can. US is like, well, at least this is an easy way to weed out people that are doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, it's just funny to see. I really think people thought it was going to be like this huge change in like how money is kind of tracked, but it's not going to be.
At the end of the day, this might sound crazy, but at the end of the day, countries want control over their currency.
Shocking. Yeah. It's shocking. It's very surprising. Yeah.
The people in power that make the rules want control over their currency. Will they let a currency that they cannot, or that could be external to them, will they let it flourish? Probably not.
Well, yeah, probably not.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Pretty much.
But like, even with Stanley, that notwithstanding, like these you know, individuals have done some criminal things, so it is good to see them brought to justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Hamish, should we continue and talk about the second really big news story of the week?
Yeah,
and that's everything going down at OpenAI, the makers, the creators of ChatGPT, the AI that's going to solve all English essay problems and in the process destroy the world. Such a weird turn of events. This is crazy that none of this had even started going down by the time when we were recording the podcast. This has all happened in the last like few days. I think it's been 5 days that this has played out across. Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI, he has been ousted by the board. He's been hired by Microsoft. And he has also left Microsoft to resume his position as CEO of OpenAI.
Wow, okay.
All in about 5 days. So yes, after several days of crisis and tumult, Sam Altman has returned as the CEO of OpenAI. He's gotten, so he's gotten fired by a CEO, then hired and then reinstated all in a few days. So the New York Times says, for much of the past year, OpenAI's board of directors has been criticized as too small and too divided to effectively govern one of the fastest growing startups in Silicon Valley history. On Friday, the board's dysfunction spilled into public view when four of its members fired Sam Altman, OpenAI's popular and powerful chief executive. The dismissal uncorked five turbulent days as Mr. Altman rallied almost all of the company's 770 employees to lobby for the board's resignation and his reinstatement. Mr. Altman, 38, returned to the company on Tuesday night after days of haggling over his job and over the makeup of the board. The board and Mr. Altman's allies discussed more than a half dozen options for its future. They considered a board size of 3 to 7 members and discussed about 30 candidates, including Lauren Powell Jobs, the widow of Steve Jobs and founder of the Emerson Collective, and Brian Chesky, the chief executive of Airbnb. The departing board wanted to make sure the replacements would be independent thinkers and experienced enough to stand up to Mr. Altman. Hoo-hoo, stand up to him. On Tuesday evening, both sides agreed to create a provisional 3-person board. It is expected to expand in the coming months, 2 people close to the negotiations said, but the exact number was unclear. The new group will be responsible for analyzing the structure of OpenAI, the ChatGPT chatbot developer, which started as a non-profit in 2015, but later added a for-profit subsidiary. This is the thing that I found weird about OpenAI. It started as a non-profit in 2015, but as the founders, it started as a non-profit because the founders, they were hoping that it wouldn't be beholden to commercial interests. How's that going?
It's working well
but
for them.
Yeah, then later. Yeah, very well for them. But then later on, so once they found out that, you know, they could actually make some money doing this stuff, they created a subsidiary of the non-profit, which is for-profit.
Right.
But the parent company, OpenAI Inc., they're still a non-profit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How does that even work?
But it's interesting because...
I get that.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's bloody bonkers. But the funny thing is because this parent company, OpenAI Inc., still controls everything as the non-profit, it has a board. It has this weird board of 6 people. And that's what made it possible for literally 4 people to just get rid of Sam Altman for good. So
it's a
weird structure, and I don't know. There must be some workaround because I think the reason behind it is they genuinely do want the progression of AI to not be associated to profit. But I think they realized along the way that they do need to create, you know, for it to scale. Simply donations and funding wasn't going to scale along with AI's growth and development. So they did need some sort of business model behind it to keep it growing and developing.
Yeah.
But I think the parent company still operates with the intent that they don't want to over-commercialize this this technology. They just want to see it grow and be more developed, I suppose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess the... being for-profit or at least having a for-profit subsidiary probably allows them to attract much more funding in the form of actual investment. People and companies willing to put, you know, billions of dollars on the line because they'll get, you know, they'll get something back from it. So I guess it does make sense as their kind of ambitions grow and as the company's kind of evolved. I thought it was, I did think it was kind of funny. I saw that they have 770 employees and I think 700 of them were willing to walk out to quit, which is like the entire company. So they obviously had to, you know, make that work in some way, which is kind of funny. Like it only took 4 people to get him out, but Sam could get 700, basically 90% of the employees on his side to basically get him back, which I thought was kind of an interesting situation.
Sam Altman definitely sounds like... a very well-liked character. I mean, I honestly don't know much about him, but Sam Altman definitely sounds like he's very well-liked. But yeah, it is kind of crazy that he can have 4 people oust a guy that literally the whole of the company wants to keep, like all the employees want to keep. So let's name and shame some people, Hamish. So long story short, it was Isla Sutskever, Helen Toner, Tasha McCauley, and Adam D'Angelo that opted to vote out Sam. And under pressure from Altman and the workforce, Isla, Helen, and Tasha have stepped down. And in their place comes some interesting names. Salesforce co-CEO Brett Taylor as chair. Former U.S. Secretary Larry Summers.
Right.
Sorry, former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers. And the Cura CEO and board member Adam D'Angelo that voted against Altman is the only member of the prior board who retains his seat. So
that's got to be awkward.
Awkward next board meeting. Awkward. I'm back.
That's pretty
cool. Adam, you didn't get rid of me.
Yeah, that's kind of funny that that one of them is staying. Yeah. I wonder how he spun that. Like, I just felt like I had to. Like, he was peer pressured.
Imagine just like the next board meeting when Altman's like, all right, good. Yeah, we're all on board. And Larry's like, yeah, sounds good to me. Brett's like, mm-hmm, yeah, that's great. And then in comes Adam's like, well, actually, never mind.
Yeah, they all walk into the board meeting and like there's like an extra little table at the end of the board and Altman's like, oh, that's the kids' table. That's for you, Adam.
Yes, that's for you, Adam. Go sit there. Yeah. Sit there.
Yes, to sit on like a little plastic chair.
Face the wall. Turn your chair out. Face the wall.
He gets time out.
Oh dear, oh dear, Hamish. But yeah, that's pretty much what's happening right now. I mean, it's still unfolding. I'm sure there'll be little bits and pieces to come after this. But yeah, a bit of an interesting story. Normally, you kind of see these, I don't know, weird things happen where people get ousted, but it's not usual that you see them then come back around and get reinstated. So, crazy. I mean, he must be a liked character, as you were saying before, with most of the company really pressuring the board to make some changes. So, there you go.
Wow, insane. Well, at least at least ChatGPT didn't take over the board. I was a little worried.
I was seeing that like on the forums and stuff. People were like, oh, I wonder if this is the turning point. Was it AI that actually ousted Sam?
Yeah, it's like he will be replaced by, it's like Sambot or something. Like, hang on a second. Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah. Sambot, Tasha Bot, Helen Bot.
Yeah.
So funny. But then they get replaced by the bots, and then over the next 5 years, like their business compounds at like 100% annually or something.
Yeah, it actually works out really like, good.
That's exactly right. The interesting thing, I think in the future, the only other thing I want to add, I think in the future Microsoft are looking to get a spot on the board, someone from Microsoft. I found it interesting that Microsoft didn't have any sort of board representation at all, considering they invested so heavily in the project.
Yeah.
But I think that was maybe a special condition for Microsoft or for OpenAI to kind of do that deal with Microsoft, is they wanted to make sure that the board wasn't disrupted or opened up to commercial interests, because that's direct conflict with the mission statement that they were talking about. So maybe there's something to do with that. But I think now it sounds like down the track we will get some Microsoft representation.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, yes. Again, apologies, everyone. We're dealing with all kinds of technical issues. This podcast. Yep. It's even more.
I mean, when this podcast goes out, it should sound good. But hopefully. if we released the raw like hour and a half that we've tried to record this podcast, you guys would it wouldn't be a good time. We've stopped the podcast. We've had technical issues. We've had just atrocious lag. Yeah. But we're battling through.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it still sounds okay.
Yeah, hopefully.
But that's all I had to say with Sam and the OpenAI stuff. So where you take us somewhere next, Hamish? Where do you want to go?
Let's stay on the artificial intelligence train and let's talk about Nvidia, which reported their quarterly earnings earlier in the week. Red hot demand for their graphics chips used in the AI boom continue to fuel the company, which is of course I believe it's still the leader in the S&P in terms of how much it's gone up this year. I had it at a check
probably
just before. It was it's up 240% year to date. So I would I think it is the leader this year, and it's on the back of all of this AI hype and the fact that Nvidia's graphics chips are the best for all kinds of companies looking to develop in this space. So how's the business performing? Because of course, when a stock goes up that much, the expectations are extremely high, and we've already seen a couple of quarters where their growth has been exceptional, and this quarter was just absolutely astronomically good. Total revenue for the quarter came in at $18 billion, $18.1 billion, which was an increase of 206% year over year. So big increase in their revenue. Most of that revenue came from their data center business, $14.5 billion, which was up 279% year over year. And half of that revenue came from cloud infrastructure providers like Amazon and Microsoft. So there's this obviously this huge demand that these companies are buying all of these chips and all of this storage and everything, and then kind of renting it out to all kinds of companies running sites. You know, like Twitter will run on some of these sites, and Netflix, and all basically pretty much most big companies now run through Amazon or Microsoft's cloud. Their cloud services rather than running their own servers. So it's this enormous business that's just been exploding in demand. And then the other kind of half of data center revenues is companies running their own servers. So there's still a lot of smaller companies that might have like a small server room or something along those lines. So yeah, that's the kind of the vast majority of their business now, which is interesting because just as recently as 2 years ago, the gaming segment of their business was larger than data center.
That's really the thing that's gone, that's exploded over the last couple of years. Because you're right, when you think Nvidia, maybe if you're, you know, in your 20s, or maybe if you like video games, you know, when you think of Nvidia, you just think, oh, graphics cards.
Yeah.
Because that's like when we were kind of growing up, that's what they did. They made like graphics cards for computers. They were the driving force behind video gaming. And it's only recently that they've figured out that, hang on, this AI business, this is big business, and we can provide the hardware for that. So yeah, and as this is why over the past year, pretty much since ChatGPT was released, all these companies are just going bananas for AI, trying to develop their own thing, and Nvidia is firmly putting themselves in there as being the hardware provider for AI. So.
Yeah,
it's not surprising to see their earnings go bananas as all the companies try and do their own thing in AI, and they need hardware to do it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. The gaming segment of their revenue was $2.9 billion. That segment was up 81% year over year. So the gaming segment also grew pretty significantly. $2.9 billion in their gaming segment. The data center revenue was almost $15 billion. And just 2 years ago, it was smaller than the gaming segment, which just shows like that's where the growth is coming from. On top of all of this growth, in terms of revenue, their profits saw an astronomical surge. Profits surged to $9.2 billion in the quarter, up from $680 million last year, which is a 1,200% increase year over year.
Thank you very much.
So,
take that.
Massive increase in profits. I think we earlier in the year when we were talking about Nvidia, we were kind of saying, you know, this is the where the stock is now. This is kind of the astronomical growth they'll have to see in their profits. And certainly, they're at least contributing in a meaningful way towards that. And that can happen. With a company like Nvidia, you know, even though revenue's up 200%. If they have some kind of scale economics, then their profitability can really go through the roof, and that's certainly been the case over the last year.
It's impressive. It's very impressive.
Yeah, very very impressive. They also increased their guidance for next quarter. They're expecting $20 billion in revenue next quarter, which is implied growth of 231% year over year. So the growth isn't expected to slow down, at least in the next quarter or so. The Nvidia CEO said strong growth reflects a transition into a new era of computing, and a surge in generative AI systems such as OpenAI's ChatGPT that can generate convincing language and images with minimal prompting, which is just a fancy way of saying AI good for NVIDIA's business. I can't say I know all that much about this space and where it goes over the next few years. I'm kind of just happily watching this quarter by quarter and enjoying their, watching their astronomical growth. There were a couple of challenges that potentially will have some limitations on their business, but probably not in a meaningful way, but they were kind of noted by people covering this. US did earlier put restrictions on GPU sales to China, which NVIDIA also noted will likely hurt that part of their business. And then AMD, which is their, I think, their biggest competitor in GPU sales, but hasn't really been a competitor, is trying to ramp up their ability to take a little bit of market share away from NVIDIA. But I believe NVIDIA is very far ahead in terms of that stuff specifically, which is why they've been able to capitalize in a meaningful way.
A few challenges ahead, but not as many headwinds as there are tailwinds.
That's the correct way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jensen's just been going crazy talking about this stuff over the past year. He's a very, very excited boy, is Jensen Huang.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, maybe fair enough. Also, AI keeps kicking.
Yeah. So with all of this incredible news, how much did the stock surge? How much did the stock go up? 10%, 20%? It went down
25.
It went down 3%. Which is kind of what happens when a company has a significant amount of hype behind it. As I mentioned at the beginning, the stock's already up 240% this year. So even though their profits are rising a lot, it's markets work on expectation. So because these results were kind of expected, at least to some extent, the market doesn't kind of react too positively to this news, at least today. That positive increase has already been baked into the price, at least for this quarter.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
What's the general rule? If you post good earnings, your stock goes down. If you post bad earnings, your stock goes up.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, this just shows you, like, trading earnings. Gosh, what a disaster. Never trade earnings, guys. Never do it.
No.
Just don't.
Well, yeah.
Please don't.
We've seen companies even beat expectations and the stock goes down. So it's not even just about beating expectations. It's certainly not about just growing earnings, but it's not even just about beating expectations. Stocks do weird things. And I would not want to be someone who's trying to use options or something to trade around earnings. It just seems like a disaster.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, there you go. That's very interesting. Is that all we had to talk about for NVIDIA? They are certainly powering ahead, which is so interesting because we were talking about how it seemed like a pretty big meme stock all of 6 months ago because it had risen so much and their profits really hadn't started rising all that much just yet. But now it's starting to walk into its valuation. I mean, it's probably still got a very long way to go. But, I mean, it's posting very fast growth at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly starting
to grow into its valuation. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But it is. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly filling the shoes. That's the thing, right? It's like, when a stock goes up that much, the expectations are really high. That doesn't mean they can't meet those expectations.
It's true.
Sometimes companies do. It's just not very often that it does. It's very impressive when they do. And at least for now, certainly it's been supporting the stock price increase.
Nice. All right. Where to next, Hamish? Where to next?
Yeah.
Are you going to talk about this media news? What do you got in terms of this media
news? Yeah, I thought I'd lump in a couple of interesting news related to YouTube and to streaming services and to cable businesses. I thought I'd just kind of lump them all together and we can do a little bit of a media news segment, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Media news update with Hamish Harder.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's it. So the first piece was Biden wants to ban cable cord cutting fees. So the Federal Communication Commission on Tuesday announced a rule proposed to ban early termination fees for cable and satellite service contracts. The proposed rule would require cable operators and direct
broadcast satellite, or DBS, providers to eliminate early cancellation fees. It would also require cable and DBS companies to provide customers with a pro rata credit or rebate for the remaining days within a billing cycle after cancellation.
I see.
So, yeah, I think...
Misunderstood.
Yeah, it's a bit of a non-story because it's not as if a ban has actually happened. It's just a proposed ban. But it would be a pretty big deal for the cable industry, which has already taken, you know, a number of hits, as we've kind of seen, especially over the last 5 years or the last decade. I had a quick look again just to get the numbers right. But pay TV households in the US was 100 million in 2014. It's now 48 today, which is a nasty 50% of their market that has decided to no longer continue with their cable subscription. And I would imagine this probably accelerates that decline if it was kind of put through, because you could imagine there's probably quite a few of these contracts that are kind of 12-month, 24-month kind of locked-in contracts that maybe included free installation or something like that, right? So it's a kind of a bundled deal. But now with being able to cancel without an early termination fee, potentially, you know, the value proposition between like a streaming service and this now kind of changes in some way, at least in a small way.
It's interesting. So there's he's trying to ban early termination fees.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I find that interesting. I always think that when you sign a contract, you've got to be, I feel like you just got to know what you're signing. Like, is that not like common knowledge? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's good for the consumer if you don't want cable anymore and you can just end it and you face no penalty. But isn't, I don't know. Everybody knows that if you're going to sign, put your signature on a document, you've got to read it, right? You got to make sure you're okay with the T's and the C's, as they say.
Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone likes lock-in fees, and I'm a big fan of the fact that kind of naturally over time, those kinds of contracts have gone away. I think they used to be much more common, even for things like mobile, right? Like you'd have to have these like lock-in contracts and that sort of thing, and even that is far less common now. So I don't think anyone likes those fees, but it's kind of weird. I think it's just like a weird, unnecessary thing for the government to legislate. I mean, like it seems completely unnecessary because you've got competition from like streaming services that have kind of already naturally created better alternatives that are not locked in.
Yeah.
And as a result, 50% of people have cut cable. So it's kind of like the market forces are already doing it. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why do you need to do that? I mean, if people don't like the lock-in contracts, there are plenty of media pay TV alternatives that do not have lock-in contracts, which is why they're becoming more popular. And the same thing is true for mobile. Like, mobile network companies started offering these contracts without lock-in fees. And as a result, people choose them because they're better. And people want the freedom. So it just seems like a weird, unnecessary stab in the back of someone who's already like on their knees. Mm. It just seems strange. That's all it is. Like, it just seems an unnecessary thing. I don't think there's like heaps of people who are just like locked into like, as far as I'm aware, no one's locked into like a 10-year, you know, cable like contract or something insane where like they just can't get out of it. I don't know. I presume that doesn't exist. I presume these are like 12-month contracts, that kind of thing.
That would be the only thing that would be super hectic is if the industry is completely changed over the time of the contract and you still can't get out without paying like this massive but yeah, you're right, let the market forces do it. Hamish, you dirty capitalist, you.
Yeah, I know, how dare I.
How dare you. It makes sense, the market forces will do it. I mean, people, you know, companies creating better offerings now to put the pressure on the cable providers, and cable suffering because of it.
Yeah,
so it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get locked into a lot of these streaming sites, do you?
No, I don't know. I mean, the only kind of lock in is like you can pay probably like an annual fee to get an annual subscription of like maybe like Disney Plus, but that's not really like lock in. That's just you buying an annual. I guess I don't know. Is that like the same thing? I don't know. But that's not really common anyway. Yeah, most people just pay on a month by month basis.
Yeah. Okay. It's plastered all over them. Cancel anytime.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, people love
that's
that.
That's like they lead with that. It's like no lock in, cancel anytime, free for X amount of days. You know, that's like the standard spiel.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So anyway, so that was my first piece of media news. The other one was just we got a monthly update on kind of the analysis of television watch time. And I kind of want to talk about it a little bit because YouTube just continues to be an absolute beast, even in the living room, which is obviously really fascinating to watch as more and more people choose to even just watch YouTube just, on their television, and how that's affected the percentage of watch time. So Nielsen releases this data every month on the website. It's called The Gauge, if anyone's interested in checking it out. Streaming as a whole had a share of 36.6%. So 36.6% of watch time was streaming, and YouTube's kind of included in streaming. It was actually down 1% month over month. They lost a little bit of ground to broadcast or free-to-air TV, and that's really just due to sports viewing in the beginning of some of their sports seasons. Broadcast gained 1.4 percentage points to reach 24.6%, and cable lost 0.3 percentage points to be 29.5%. In streaming, YouTube now grabs 9.1% of all TV viewing. So 9.1% of all television viewing is now YouTube, and it's by far the biggest individual item there. In May, earlier this year, an insider at YouTube actually said that 45% of all YouTube viewing in the US was on televisions, up from 30% in 2020, wow. Which is this is unconfirmed by YouTube. This was just like an anonymous person familiar with the matter, you know, insider at YouTube saying this. Yep. So take it with a pinch of salt. But if that's true, that's an insane stat that 50% of YouTube is now, television, living room consumption.
Well, I used to not even watch YouTube on my TV because my TV was just so old and bad. Like I hated loading apps. And it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember you were saying, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because you watch all of your YouTube on your TV.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah, I just watch it on my laptop if I'm watching or on my mobile. Since I got like a capable TV,
yeah,
I watch all my YouTube on my TV now because I love it.
Yeah, I think that's what's happened. I think as people get like, especially because smart TVs that are capable of that are getting really cheap now as well as the technology evolves. I think a lot more people now just have the capability to watch YouTube, especially because people are kind of upgrading to just watch streaming anyway. Like people are upgrading, okay, let's get a good TV so I can watch Netflix and Disney Plus. And then if they can run those, then they can run YouTube pretty well usually as well. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Next was kind of Netflix with 7.2%, then Prime Video, Amazon Prime, 3.6%, Hulu with 3.1%, and Disney Plus with 1.9%, and then all the rest were kind of 1.5%. And then the three kind of notable stats for the month were, do you remember last month we were talking about how Suits was the the biggest show for the month? It continues to be the biggest show again.
Oh.
And I think it's been the biggest show like most months of this year, which is just crazy that it's even as like streaming originals come out, like there's been some big originals from Netflix and Disney and Hulu, but even as all those shows come out, Suits, which is finished, still is the biggest. Which is
it's so interesting that that's become a trend. I know we spoke about this last time, so I won't harp on about it too much, but it's like people these days choose the comfort of knowing what they like over trying something new.
Yeah.
It's like very strange. Like all these old shows that people have seen in maybe their childhood or early adult years and that they've now come back to, they seem to be preferring that, you know, that content over the fresh new stuff that's being released. Obviously there's still a lot of fresh new like viral stuff that comes out. Mm. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know. I feel that's quite interesting, and it probably like tells you something a little bit more about just like the nature of how film and TV is made these days. I mean, it's made not even so much these days with a mind on how good the show is. It's made with a mindset of, will this make money? How much money can we put towards it? How much money will it make? That kind of thing. Yeah. So you don't like we were having a laugh at some of the like old comedies that we were watching and how it's just like, this just wouldn't get this low budget, you know, comedy that's hilarious. It just wouldn't get made today. It just wouldn't work. So
it is. Yeah, it is interesting. I think, I don't know about the movies, but when it comes to television, I think there's just clearly this huge demand for watch time that's kind of like background noise TV, where you don't want to like think too much about what you want to watch. You just want to stick something on that has a lot of episodes that are all very similar, like Friends or The Office or Suits is kind of like that in many aspects. You kind of just want something on in the background while you're eating dinner or you're cooking dinner or you're doing chores. And I think clearly there's a big portion of people's time where that still is the case, where people just put something on the TV, which is, you know, it plays to some of those shows, a lot of the shows that were made when people were watching on cable, where you would just literally put the TV on and the cable provider, or not the cable provider, the network would basically decide what you're going to watch. Like it would be like, you know, it's already scheduled out. You're going to watch Friends for 3 episodes and then this for 3 episodes. So it's kind of funny to see that behavior hasn't changed in some aspects. And then that was pretty
interesting.
That's pretty much it. Disney had a good increase in their viewership. A couple of their shows were number 2 and 3 on the most viewed. And then Amazon Prime had a small increase due to their Thursday night NFL contract, which they bought a little while ago. So, yeah.
Interesting. It is interesting seeing streaming sites get into sport, but that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, Hamish, we would go into Q&A right now, guys, but unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap things up because, I know I said before that New Money Education is out, but I'm very stressed and I need to get back to it.
It's out in the future.
It's out in the future. I've got a call that I have to get on right now. But yeah, sorry about all of the, I know this episode has been messy. We're sorry, we've had so many technical issues, which has made us run overtime, but we will get to Q&A next week for sure.
Yeah.
Apologies if there was a little bit off with the timing and the lag of this episode, but we are trying our best. We're still here. We still got through the news. Well done, Hamish.
We got it.
Congratulations. That's an achievement today.
Man.
How long has it taken us to record it? We don't even know how long this podcast is right now.
Yeah.
Because we've had to like stop out one part of the file and then start a new one. And we're stitching all this together. So it's been messy.
The mess.
Hopefully we've rounded out to roughly an hour. We could hit or miss by a little bit.
Yeah.
But,
who knows?
Anyway. Thanks for sticking with us, guys. Thank you very much. And keep the Q&A questions coming. You can still leave a comment down on Spotify natively in the question box or on the most recent episode on YouTube in the comment section. So still send us in the questions. We've got a bunch to get through next week, so we'll make sure we do that. But for now, thanks for watching, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
See you guys.